Actually, Raymond and Dana asked also for your prayers in regard to their new relationship, and I wanted to add that in. And also, I saw Ray and Dinky at lunch, and they are on their way to Waco. Their son, Michael, is contemplating entering rehab. Been having some problem with alcohol, and I know they would appreciate your prayers on behalf of them and their son, Raymond and Dinky Esri. Last week, we began the series on building an affair-proof marriage, and actually, I wonder if maybe I shouldn't change the title. Building a Happy Marriage maybe would be a better title for this series. And basically, the gist of the series, the purpose of the series is how can you build and rebuild your marriage by learning to meet the needs of your mate. Let me repeat that. That the purpose is, how can you build and rebuild your marriage by learning to meet the needs of your mate? It's not about, okay, well, you know, you heard the preacher, you know, my need, here are my needs, now meet them. That's not the purpose. But rather, how can you focus on meeting the needs of your mate? And we talked about those needs, and basically, this comes from Willard Harley in his book, His Needs, Her Needs, How to Build a Fair-Proof Marriage. And the main reason that I included them is because, not because he stated them, but because I think every one of them are biblical. They all describe exactly how God made us. And that is basically that the top five needs of woman are affection, conversation, honesty, financial security, and family commitment. And the top five needs of man are intimacy, recreational partner, attractive wife, domestic support, and admiration. And we want to talk about each of those over the next few weeks. The purpose of these lessons is to identify these needs and to get you to focus on the needs of your mate. And if both marriage partners will do that, it will ensure a happy marriage. And hopefully, it will also fair-proof your marriage, although there are certainly no guarantees. And in the lesson last week, we talked about the anatomy of an affair. And I want to make sure that I'm absolutely clear with regard to this, with what I've said and what I intend to say. I'm not sure I was that clear last week. And that is, often when an affair occurs, it's more than intimacy that's involved, but also often it is intimacy in the context of one or more of these unmet needs. We looked in Proverbs 6 at the way of the harlot. She flattered with a tongue. She tells him that, boy, you know, you're really a man. She tells him how much she admires him, and she's attractive, which basically means that she's meeting two of the needs of the male in order to catch her prey. And that's why it's so important for each marriage partner to understand the needs of their mate and to do everything they can to meet those needs. Let me give you an example. This would probably be more real to life than we like to admit. But for example, let's say that she has an affair. And then he looks back upon that relationship and realizes that he was so busy on the job. He was gone all the time. And therefore, you know, he never had time for her, never had time for the children, never had time for the family. And suddenly she goes and looks somewhere else. That's a very true to real life story in our society, unfortunately. Therefore, the point is that to have the happy marriage, you need to really focus upon your mate, your love for her and him, and do the best that you can to meet those needs. However, I want to make it plain today, because I don't think I did last week, this is not an excuse to have an affair. One might say, well, you know, my needs aren't being met, so it's okay to have an affair. Wrong. That's never right. It is never okay to commit any sin, including the sin of adultery, regardless of the circumstances. And each of those involved in marriage are responsible for their own actions. And certainly God does give the one whose mate had an affair the right to divorce that mate and to remarry. The gist of the lessons is, you make sure you understand their needs and you do everything in your power to meet those needs. And by doing so, hopefully, it will make your marriage a happy marriage. Now today I want to begin by talking about the first of these five needs of the woman. So, ladies, you can go to sleep if you want to. Men, I want you to stay awake. I want you to listen, okay? And the first of the needs of the woman is affection. And by affection, we mean the warmth, the touch, the friendship, the security. In fact, there's a Greek word. The Greek word is storge, which means basically the love of affection. There is some kind of attachment here. And the reality is that women like to be held, and they like to be touched, and they want to be made the object of your tenderness and your care. In fact, in the book of Genesis, we find an example, I think, of this. You remember that Jacob actually had two wives, Rachel and Leah. And it says that when the Lord saw that Leah was unloved, and by the way, in the same context, he loved Rachel. And it seemed like, you know, remember he had to work 7 years for her? And he said it seemed like only a few days because of his love for Rachel. But unfortunately, Leah was not loved. And when the Lord saw that Leah was unloved, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. And so Leah conceived and bore a son, and she called his name Reuben, for she said, "The Lord has surely looked on my affliction. Now, therefore, my husband will love me." But it's interesting that in the same passage, down in the 34th verse, she uses a different word, and it says she conceived again and bore a son and said, "Now this time my husband will become attached to me because I have borne him 3 sons. Therefore, his name was called Levi." What she wants is some attachment. Not just the intimacy, but she wants to be touched. She wants to be approved. She wants the security. She wants the sense of a feeling special. And husband, when you show your wife affection, it sends a message. I'll take care of you. You're important to me. I'm really concerned about you. You know, women love to hug. They love to hug others. They love to hug children. They love to hug animals. They like the touch, and they want you to hug them. Not for intimate reasons, but just simply to be held. Invite them to dinner. Say, "You know, tonight you've worked a long, you've had a long day. Tonight I'm going to treat you. You're special to me." Give them a back rub. Maybe give them a phone call during the day. Whatever it is, try to show them some kind of affection. In fact, there's another good example in the Bible, in the book of Solomon, the Song of Solomon. Now, I don't know what your interpretation of this is. My interpretation is that you have a rivalry here. You have two men that are seeking the love of the Shulamite girl, a king and a shepherd boy. And she's talking to her friends about the shepherd boy that she's in love with. And she says, "Like an apple tree among the trees of the woods, so is my beloved among the sons. I sat down in his shade with great delight, and his fruit was sweet to my taste. He brought me to the banqueting house, and his banner over me was love, sustained with cakes of raisins, refreshed me with apples, for I am lovesick." Now, maybe there's some romance there involved. But I want you to notice why she loves this young man. And that is because he's given her some attention. "He brought me to the banqueting house." The way I see it is, you know, if there was truly this rivalry, basically she's saying, I love him, you know, because more than the king who took me to the palace, I love him because he took me down to the Dairy Queen. And we had a vision. And we're such a special mom. You know, that's the idea. He's so special to me. He really makes me feel important. I love him because of the way he makes me feel. And that's so important if you want to have a happy marriage. But oftentimes, we men tend to think of the touch as leading to the intimate. That's typical for a male. But sometimes all she really wants is simply to be held and simply to be touched. And so, you know, we get all puffy about it and we say, "Well, you know, I'm not the affectionate type." Well, that's kind of like a salesman saying, you know, trying to close the deal by saying, "Well, I'm not very friendly, so just buy my product, you turkey." I mean, you're not going to sell, right? The reality is that you're not going to sell. Thus, men need to learn to be affectionate. In fact, there is an example. It's a rather ugly example over in the book of 2 Samuel, the 13th chapter. Not a very pretty picture. It's interesting that the word love is even used in the text. But in 2 Samuel chapter 13, you have these two sons of David, Absalom and Amnon. And there is the sister, Tamar. And Amnon is in love with his sister. It says in the 13th verse that after this, Absalom, the son of David, had a lovely sister whose name was Tamar. And Amnon, the son of David, loved his sister. Loved not in the sense of affection, but loved her physically. He was desiring her. That's the gist of it. He was desiring her. And so he made arrangements. Jonadab, a friend of his, said, I'll tell you how you work this out. Act like we're sick, and then call her to the bedroom, and let her take care of you, and then you'll have that opportunity. And so down in the 11th verse, it says, she brought him something to eat, and he took hold of her and said, come lie with me, my sister. And she answered and said, no, my brother, do not force me, for no such thing should be done in Israel. Do not do this disgraceful thing. And where could I take my shame? And as for you, you should be like one of the fools in Israel. Now, therefore, please speak to the king, for he will not hold me from you. However, he would not heed her voice. And being stronger than she, he forced her and lay with her. And then, verse 15, then Amnon hated her exceedingly, so that the hatred with which he hated her was greater than the love with which he loved her. And Amnon said to her, arise and be gone. That's a very ugly picture. But oftentimes, I don't think we have a problem with that here, but oftentimes we tend to see as the affection as, well, the touch is immediately we're going to get to the intimacy, when in reality is all that she really wants is to be touched and held. Therefore, men need to learn to be affectionate. And the fact is that he has different needs than she does. He still loves her, but we're different. And the best way to learn how to be affectionate is by looking and watching and listening to your wife. How can I show affection? Well, here are several examples. Hug and kiss your wife every morning while you're still in bed. Tell her you love her at breakfast. Kiss her before you leave for work. Call her during the day and see how she is doing. Surprise her with flowers or nothing more sometimes, just simply by holding her. Just simply hold her and give her that warmth and that security. It's interesting that in marriage there are actually five kinds of love. There is intimate love, there is romantic love, there is affectionate love, there is the love of friendship, and there is the divine love or love of caring. And in the context of divine love, the affection becomes really what it ought to be. You know, the Apostle Paul says in Ephesians chapter 5, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself for her. Love your wives sacrificially. I realize sometimes that it's, well, oftentimes we're not the affectionate type. It takes work. It's going to be a habit that we're going to have to get into. But if it's in the context of divine caring love, I really care about you. I really do love you. I want what is best for you. I want you to go to heaven. I want you to serve the Lord. In that context, then more and more the affection becomes something that is real to her and appreciated. And there's something else maybe you need to remember about affection. And that is that while affection is the environment, then sometimes, not always, intimacy becomes the event. But there is another need that she has, and that is that she needs conversation. And most of the time, she needs someone that will listen to her. Ladies like to talk. I mean, that's reality. I don't mean to make fun of you, but ladies like to talk. And oftentimes she says, well, why won't my husband talk to me? The common complaint of women I mean, if you sit down to counsel, is why won't he talk? Why won't he listen? And, you know, during the courtship days, you know, he was trying to impress her, and he wanted to make her happy. But all of a sudden, he's become a bore. You know, he talks about himself all the time. Or when I'm talking, he hides behind the newspaper, he's looking at the computer or watching the TV. And women want you to focus on them. They want you to focus on their day. They want you primarily to listen. In fact, the word communicate is an interesting word. Over in the book of Genesis, the second chapter, when God created the marriage relationship, the Lord God said, "It is not good that man should be alone. I will make him a helper comparable to him." There was Adam in the garden. He's all by himself. He needs a helper that is comparable to him. He needs a mate. He needs a companion. The word companion is closely akin to the word communicate. In fact, the idea of communication is fellowship, or to make in common. You see, God saw that Adam was alone, and so he made this companion, this helper for him, that would relate to him mentally, physically, socially, and spiritually. But the only way to really have companionship and the only way to really have relationship is by learning how to communicate, having a conversation, talking about each other and your needs. And that takes time. In fact, again, we noticed the relationship between these two needs. Conversation of the environment, recreation becomes the event. Isn't that how it was when you were dating? What is a date? Well, it was an excuse to get acquainted. You go to a movie, you go out to eat, you go play miniature golf, whatever it is you do nowadays. I'm going back 30 years. But whatever it is you do, you go out primarily for a couple of reasons. Number one, to get acquainted and to show each other that you care about each other. Now my question is, why should that be dropped after the wedding? I mean, if a couple will continue to do the things that brought them together, it will enhance the marriage. But for some reason, things change. And then we begin to take each other for granted. And then someone says, "Well, you know, my partner married me, you know, because she thought that I would do the same pleasing things always." Well, my question is, why not? I mean, if this was attractive to her when you were dating, then why will you not continue after the wedding to do the same things that cause you to be attracted to each other? Now, this conversation basically can accomplish a couple of things. Number one, it will help the couple to communicate the needs. How am I going to really understand my partner and her needs, or hit my partner and his needs, without talking about those two things? How can I meet, how can she meet his intimate needs without first of all talking? How can he meet her intimate needs without talking? How can he meet her need for affection without talking? And by talking, by conversation, I mean two things. Number one, assertiveness. That is, don't be afraid to tell your partner what you need. I don't mean to be selfish, but don't be afraid to tell them. And number two, engage in active listening. Now, when I sit down with a couple before they get married, we have this kind of silly, you know, go through this silly exercise. Actually, it's not silly. It has a point in which they are to look at each other and talk to each other and engage each other in conversation. She's going to say, "This is what I need. Here's my wish list. This is what I wish you would do." And then I say, "Now, sir, would you mind repeating that? Did you really hear her?" Well, that's what conversation is all about. And it will serve the need of helping the couple to communicate the need. And number two, it will help each other to learn how to meet those needs. There are some things that maybe she likes. Maybe she liked getting flowers, but maybe she would prefer a carnation over a rose. Okay, no problem. You know, carnation is probably cheaper anyway. So if that's what you want, that's great with me. You know, I'm thinking like Tommy now. But anyway, it will help you to truly learn how to meet the needs of your mate. You see, oftentimes men think of conversation as a means to an end, and it is. In these two purposes. But by the same token, women often see conversation as an end to itself. We men thinking, well, she's just spouting off. No, she has the need to talk, and we need to listen. We just need to politely listen. You see, women see the practical side of conversation is simply by meeting her need to talk. Now, in this matter of communication, let's talk about, first of all, some enemies of communication. Number one, using it to punish your mate. Over in the book of Proverbs, the 15th chapter, and verse 1. In Proverbs chapter 15, 1, Solomon says, "A soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger." And then also in chapter 21 and verse 23, again he says, "Whoever guards his mouth and tongue keeps his soul from trouble." And in chapter 29 and verse 11, he says, "A fool vents all his feelings, but a wise man holds them back." Are you a fool? Are you wise? You spout off, blow your stack. But don't use words for the purpose of punishing the other. Calling them harmful phrases, just all it does is going to fuel the fire. Putting the label on it, probably going to fuel the fire. And what it's going to do is, it's going to make your spouse less likely and less willing to meet the need of conversation. Number two, using it to force an agreement, agreement to your opinion, your way of thinking. Again, in Proverbs, the 17th chapter and the 27th verse, Solomon says, "He who has knowledge spares his words, and a man of understanding is of a calm spirit." And in the 18th chapter, the 13th verse, "He who answers a matter before he hears it, it is folly and shame to him." Sometimes you just need to listen. And perhaps in a matter of judgment to accommodate their feelings and show them respect. Number three, the third enemy of communication is dwelling on past mistakes. Apostle Paul says in Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 26, "Be angry and sin not, and let not the sun go down upon your wrath." But people want to bring it up. You know, they keep this black book, and they've got all this list of things that, you know, all the vendetta, all the things that they've got against him or her, and every time they get into conversation, it's, "Here we go again," you know. You know, it's just like the past. Things never change. And they bring up the past, and they become overly critical and overly judgmental. Converse for the purpose of accomplishing something. Let your speech be seasoned with grace. Let it be edifying. Let it be encouraging. In fact, there are some friends of communication. Number one, develop an interest in your mate's favorite topics. Ladies, if it's football, then learn to like it. And men, if it's shopping or quilting or whatever it is, learn to like it. Prime the pump. Because if you do, oftentimes it will lead to other topics. Number two, don't monopolize the conversation. And on the book of Philippians, the 2nd chapter, and verses 3 and 4, In Philippians chapter 2, verses 3 and 4, he says, "Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem others better than himself. Let each of you look out not only for his own interest, but also for the interest of others." Can you imagine how a conversation is going to go if both people follow that rule? I'm more interested in you than me. What is it you have to say? Now, if you get a couple of my rights activists in a marriage, you've got problems. And unfortunately, we've got enough of those running around these days. It's all about me, all about my rights. But if you have a couple of people that are engaged in that relationship that are givers, then you've got a great marriage. Giving to each other, yielding to each other, listening to each other, making the other person feel important. Number three, use conversation to inform and understand. Peter says that the husband is to dwell with the wife in an understanding way. Use it for the purpose of asserting yourself and informing them of your interest, but at the same time, listening and understanding and trying to understand exactly what their interests are and what their needs are. Learn the hot and cold buttons and show them that you really care. And finally, be an active listener. Give your mate your undivided attention. Try to find, probably didn't look long enough on the internet, some cartoon, because you know you've seen them, where he's watching a ball game and she's trying to get her point across, and that's usually the case, unfortunately. Turn off the radio, turn off the ball game, whatever it is, and give them your undivided attention. Make them feel important. And it will help, it go a long way in making your marriage what God wants it to be. So we talked about today the two of the first basic needs of woman. Now, next week, I'm going to talk to the ladies. We're going to talk about some of the needs of man. So, ladies, you need to come next to 2 o'clock a week. Have a good cup of coffee before lunch, during lunch, so that you can be awake and listen. And we'll talk about those next week. We've not talked a great deal about our fellowship with God, but certainly we find that the marriage relationship in Ephesians 5 is compared. Paul says that husbands love your wife as Christ loved the church and gave himself for her. And certainly Jesus did give his life sacrificially so that we might have the ultimate spiritual life and fellowship with God. God loved us enough that he gave his son. And if there's someone here today who maybe understands that and understands that the only way to enjoy that fellowship is through the Lord, we would invite you today to come and to put on Christ in baptism. If that be your need, then we can assist you. We invite you to come to stand and sing a song.